Welcome back, Dirtbags.
Get more out of life. Go out to a movie.
Rated X.
How many times do folks have to do something before it becomes tradition, do you think?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I guess you just have to do something once, right? Because you're establishing.
You establish it.
Yep. Because then, if you do it once, and then the second time, you could say, well, we're doing it because of tradition.
Right. So this was tradition.
This is tradition now. It is officially tradition.
All right. So Panic Fest, no secret, just took place 2024 last year. John came on. We talked Stephen King. We talked his movie. We talked Black Mold. We talked everything we saw. The whole shebang. The experience was a lot of fun. But we're back again this year to talk about this year's slate of movies, and with a second guest.
Hello.
How you doing? You introduce.
I'm doing great. I'm Dave Burke. I'm a friend of John's and a still photographer who occasionally works on some movies. And a Panic Fest attendee, second year in a row. So it's a tradition.
It is a tradition. Yeah, we were at a lot of screenings together and talking about the screenings we weren't together. You name it. After the shows, we were pretty much geeking. So this will be a lot of fun. I real quick here. I'm going to make sure as we move through this, I've got the schedule pulled up.
Yeah, it's probably good to have that because I don't even know how many features I'm up to for the week.
I'd have to look at my lettered box.
I guess even if we said three on average, so probably like 15 features.
I think when I counted earlier, I was at 13.
Yeah, for the something weekend. Like that. Yeah.
Which, you know, I was telling people, they're like, what the hell? I was like, well, that is par for the course. That's what you get when you go to Panic. But we can talk more about it. This year I did, we'll talk about the shorts. We'll talk about the features. I watched, I think, more features than I have in the past this year. It's tough. Like, you know, I always try to catch the short blocks, but it's so much this year. You know, it's crazy because I think we're up to, we had five in-house.
Five short film blocks.
Yes. And then online there was like another five more.
Maybe a little bit more.
And I know we talked about last year how crazy it is that, you know, that we have online with so many submissions that now we're online, but it just seems like more and more and more. So it is a nice little addition, a little luxury where you can go online and watch some of the stuff that you just can't catch at all.
Right.
And it allows more filmmakers to get their stuff out too. You know, that's the thing.
And what was really cool, and both Adam and Tim talked about this too, but this year, to the best of my knowledge, this year, the most amount of filmmakers who were virtual only attended the festival.
That's so cool.
Because I think I met five that they didn't have their films playing in the theater. They're only virtual. And it's really cool because, as Adam always says, you're still a part of the festival.
Absolutely.
And in some regards, probably more people are watching your shorts online than they are in the theater. Because a lot of the shorts were in Theater 2, which holds about 70. And there's however many festival pass holders that all have the virtual access.
Yes.
Which is like 150 some. And then there's the people that buy just virtual only.
Right.
So, yeah, it's great. It was so cool that so many virtual filmmakers came out to be a part of this festival.
100%.
And with the hybrid, too, the people that didn't get to see their short here, you're going to go home and watch it because you still have, you know, four days or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as we'll touch on here, there may be some you just watch twice because you go home and watch it virtually because they're just so damn good. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, kind of, you know, as a whole, I mean, that just for those, the uninitiated, it's kind of, Panic Fest is the genre fest here in Kansas City. Thrillers, horror movies, sci-fi stuff. Really quickly becoming, it is one of the largest, most exciting genre fest in the country. And it just continues to gain that traction each and every year. It's fascinating to see the growth. I mean, it's crazy.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
It's so deserved. And I've said this so much throughout the weekend. Anytime I talk to filmmakers, that was their first time. But what makes Panic Fest different than all other festivals that I've gone to, and I've gone to a lot, it's the horror community that exists within Kansas City.
Yeah.
As someone who lives here, it's probably hard for you to like really get a grasp of what this horror community is like. But as someone who doesn't live here, it is, I've said it so many times, it is the most welcoming, the most supportive, the most enthusiastic horror community I've ever experienced in my life. And the screenings reflect that.
Yes, that's the, yeah.
And
yeah.
Something that I never hear anyone at Panic Fest say, I fucking hated that movie. That movie was shit. That right. movie sucked. You'll hear people say, it wasn't for me. This is what I didn't like about it. But everyone's still coming from a place of just being respectful.
Absolutely.
And excited. And that is not common at all.
Yeah, it's something.
Oh, there's right. something so fucking special about not just this festival, but this theater, Screenland Armor, and the community here. It makes a truly remarkable festival.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it is. I think, you know, being in it, I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, the community is phenomenal as it is. I mean, you don't get to witness it in this capacity until this time of year.
Of course.
You know, and the I do love the Q&A, the feedback you get from filmmakers a lot of times is, holy shit. I mean, we block off 15 minutes after each, you know, if we can, if the filmmakers are here after these, the features, and just to give them a chance to kind of shed some light on the films themselves and answer some audience questions. And they're just really good questions. I mean, yes. A lot of people are thoughtful about it. It's not, you know, nobody's phoning it in. Right. You know, they're asking questions that I'm like, oh shit, yeah, that's really yeah. damn good. I'm sitting yeah. up there like, oh, Sean thought of that. So, yeah, it's exciting. And I honestly can't believe, I mean, we were talking about it outside. Like, it's like a time warp. You know, you go into the theater on Thursday night, you come out on Sunday, and there's still stuff going on, but really you kind of emerge right. back into the real world a little bit more so on that Monday morning. And it feels like, I mean, I missed it. I was like a how long was I gone, you know? Because, like, the world was going on, but I'm like, I'm still in Panic Fest brain for, like, another 48 hours after right. oh, well, you leave the theater.
Being that, you know, Dave and I, we're not at home right now. We're still in Panic Fest mode. So I have no idea what is happening yeah. outside of – I mean, I've been out throughout Kansas City, but I don't really know what's happening yeah. outside of Screenland.
I haven't been checking my emails and the news. I don't know what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I'm in a – movie time bubble right now.
And there's a beauty to that, because there is so much humdrum throughout the year that this is like one of the most exciting times. I had a friend, his name is Sam, and I told him I was going to shout him out. He came up for a screening, and he was just like, what? I need to get a pass next year, or I need to buy more tickets. I need to be here more. Mm-hmm. This is really, really cool. And so I think it's like, you know, you don't have to like kind of like be as into it. You don't have to like commit your whole weekend to come up here and witness something. Sure. So that's something too that I love that they're doing. This was the first year that we did individual tickets like early
in advance.
So you could yeah. hop on a website, on the website, on the app, say, okay, what looks good? Let me get my foot in. Mm-hmm. And I would be so curious to know the number of people who bought individual tickets and then came back, like bought more screenings.
Absolutely.
You know, because that I'm sure it's a few. I know I had a few friends that came up night one for Night of the Comet, and I was talking to them. They had like tickets for the shorts. I think I remember seeing them at a different screening that they didn't mention.
Perfect.
You know, the next day I was like, you guys, it sucks you in.
It does. And again, part of that comes back to the community.
Yeah, it just feels good.
It's so fun. The energy when you're in the lobby in between movies. The energy that exists is just infectious.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Well, and I believe this is the case, that it's kind of like the first genre fest of the year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have South by Southwest, which, you know, will have genre stuff.
That's fair.
And yeah. Overlook was happening at the weekend this year. But it is one of the first, for sure.
Yeah. And so it's neat. It's a neat timing of things, too, because I feel like you get a lot of premieres.
Mm-hmm.
You also get a lot of stuff like towards the tail end of its run,
mm-hmm. right?
And yeah, it's like, definitely. You don't have to wait. Like, it's like, this is going to be available so you can geek about it. And then you guys don't have to wait long to watch it because it'll be yes. right around the corner.
Like,
so
All You Need Is Death is a film from Ireland
yeah.
that directed by Paul Duane. And that was one of the films I got to host. But we screened that on Sunday, and then it's getting released on VOD Friday the 11th, I think is what he said. So it is the very last festival
yeah.
of its run. And like you said, it's cool because you get the world premieres, which I don't even remember how many there were this year, like 10 yeah. or something like that, maybe yeah. a little bit more. And then you get the people that are finishing their festival run. So there's there's celebration in so many ways.
Yes.
Celebration because the film's just coming out, and celebration because the film is, you know, finishing up its run and about to get released.
And also kind of just what you just said. I mean, we say that just kind of like it, not that it's lost. It's just that this happens so frequently, how cool it is. A film from Ireland.
Yes.
So it is the fest pulls so many different, you know, walks of life,
mm-hmm.
and different cultures and different, you know, points of view. It's just, it's not lacking any, the diversity is so cool to see.
Right. I mean,
last night we saw Tiger Stripes as Malaysian film, and you just don't expect the international films as much as you would just a U.S. release.
Yes. No, very, very, very true. I figure, you know, because this, you know, last year we talked quite a bit about the fest. We did have a little additional Stephen King conversation.
Hard we don't for have to me go not to talk this about year. Stephen King. We don't have to this year. I'm happy to, but we don't have to.
Sitting here talking to Stephen King.
It was sort of on the nose. Like, we have to do this. We just can't gloss over the fact that it was kind of a several years in the making conversation. But we can kind of go ahead and dive right in and start talking about kind of the walk through the screenings. I know there may be some that we don't overlap, so we'll kind of maybe go through, and if there are movies that one of us caught that the other didn't, we can kind of just touch on those.
Well, were you in All You Need Is Blood?
No, but I saw – so I really did a poor job of like planning my Monday, Tuesday, because I was so preoccupied with that weekend getting all the tickets lined up. So I didn't quite check out all the titles right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And then I saw that and I'm like, wait a minute. All You Need Is – okay. No. All You Need Is Death played on Sunday. All You Need Is Blood played.
Okay. I couldn't remember if they were on the same day or not, but yeah. All You Need Is Blood.
Something else?
Holy shit. Holy shit. I know all three of us saw Off Ramp, which, you know, was an absolute joy and delight.
Yes.
And it went in places you would not expect a movie about juggalos to go.
Absolutely.
And it was very surprising. I would go as far to say All You Need Is Blood left my jaw on the floor even more than Off Ramp in terms of where it went and what it did. It was more ridiculous, but in a completely different way. And
that's cool.
The crowd, it was amazing to see it with everyone. But everyone that was sitting in our row, like, we were all losing our minds. Because it's a movie that every 20 minutes, you're like, okay, I see where this is going. And then it goes even further. You're like, okay, now I know. Nope, we're going to go even further. And then by the end, it is just complete ridiculousness. And it was incredible.
I love that.
I think someone mentioned a movie like Dead and Breakfast, which I don't know if you ever saw Dead and Breakfast.
Okay.
It came out in like 2004-ish or so, just in the level of absurdity and gore and comedy and the horror and stuff. Because All You Need Is Blood is about an aspiring filmmaker who's a teenager, and he wants to make art. He's looking to make like real drama, real emotional stuff, showing the human condition. And then he wants to win this film festival that just opened in his small town, but the genre you have to make is horror. And he is upset about that because he's too good horror. He's too above horror. Gosh. And his dad inadvertently becomes a zombie, like an actual zombie. And so then he's like, well, why don't we just make a zombie picture? I can just have my dad in this. And so it starts as this coming of age film about these two best friends making movies, and it goes so fucking weird, so unbelievably weird, and in a lot of different places. But it was really fun and adorable and gross and gooey and
everything you want.
Everything you
That's
want.
That's so cool. Okay.
Everything you want.
Do, and I don't know, because I couldn't remember if the film, were the filmmakers here
they
for that
weren't
one?
Here.
Okay.
No.
I was kind of curious when that one would be out in the wild.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure. But cool. I mean, Off Ramp. I mean, we should probably talk about Off Ramp.
Off Ramp. Yes. Do you want to kind of go through like this, like day how we day. Saw it?
And day then, by day?
And that way. Because I mean, I have it pulled up here, kind of the.
Let's do it.
The opening night there. Start kicked off. The plan was to have Joe Bob and Darcy come back out,
right?
And, do a hosting of Night of the Comet 40th anniversary. Joe Bob fell ill, unfortunately, but we had backup Faux Bob Briggs with Joe Lynch. And you know, for those that might not know, there's this. It's a loving feud between the two of them, just back and forth banter. And Joe Bob did submit it was several minute intro. I think
it was 14 minutes, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was a good amount of it was a solid Joe Bob intro, which you would expect, you know. Mm-hmm. And he did his whole thing, gave the drive-in totals, and really razzed Joe as he introed it. But it was super cool to see that with the crowd. You know, of course, you know, Night of the Comet, classic movie. It's always like something like last year we saw Renfield. Just mm-hmm. really good, like kind of set the tone type movies.
Yeah.
I feel like this every year there's something really, really energetic. It helps. Everybody's ready to go. So you start off with a classic and seeing it on the big screen. Cause that's like, you know, with Night of the Comet, I mean, a lot of people caught that on home video.
Oh, sure.
Or on TV.
HBO or wherever. Yeah.
Absolutely. But never like that with a crowd of that size and that level of energy. So that, of course, was a blast. But then Sting. We all saw Sting.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And that was such a surprise, a treat. I mean, I was so – I thought it would be a good time. It's a Spider movie.
Right.
So, okay, we'll have some fun. But that was way more fun than I thought it would be.
Super fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had not heard anything about it prior, just going in blind. You don't know what to expect.
Yes. I saw that image of the spider hanging above the girl's head. I'm like, oh, okay, that's creepy. Nothing else. Completely in the dark. And it's – the way it was kind of pitched, I mean, Adam kind of, I guess, gave a little bit of color before I went to the theater. Like, it's kind of more of the accessible of – like, there was two Spider movies this year. So there's Infested Tonight at 9 and Sting played that first night. So it's more of the accessible kind of movie. But I will say, like, it's it had one of the kills of the fest for me. I mean, it got under my skin a little bit, man. I won't ruin it for anybody.
The bathroom. The bathroom? Yeah, yes, okay. Yeah.
Great effects, great usage of something that I think everybody has at least a little bit of – you know, fear of, it can't help it. I mean,
Adam said to me that he thought Sting leaned more towards a film like Arachnophobia.
Sure.
And then we watched it and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Cause you use the term accessible.
Yeah.
And it is, it's creepy, crawly fun.
Yeah.
You know, and of course we get some gore and we get some, and it's got humor throughout, but it's also visually kind of dark and menacing, but it wasn't we're going to show everything. It was a little bit reserved in the way that it showed the spider, which worked out great.
Yeah.
Because it was cool and there's so much practical effects with the spider that looked remarkable. But it was one that I feel like teenagers, like 12-year-olds, could sit around and watch it at a sleepover.
Yeah.
And have a bunch of fun.
It would be great.
And they're not going to be terrified to sleep or anything like that, but they're just going to laugh a lot and jump. And that's what kind of translated into the theater. I think everyone was just like having a blast. Just
absolutely.
An absolute blast with it.
Yeah, it's funny too, because like these movies, and both Spider movies seem to be set in apartments, right? There's this kind of thing, this kick right now, right? Because Evil Dead Rise was, I remember seeing that one and like, okay, it kind of gives that Demons 2 like Record or Quarantine. Yeah. Like you get like these, and I think that works. I didn't know if it would work for Evil Dead when it came out. I was like, okay, this is a Cabin in the Woods franchise outside of maybe Army of Darkness, but is that going to land for me? I don't know. The urban setting. I loved Evil Dead Rise. And I'm kind of digging this like trapped in your own home horror that's coming. Sure. That's kind of hitting right now.
Well, and it's cool too when you do the apartment complex, because Sting did this really well. You're not just getting one group of characters. You're able to get the neighbors. And so you get a little spice. You know, like you're adding seasoning to your characters. And you can step away from your main characters for a little bit, get this absurd moment, and come back to them.
Right. And you're all kind of right there in that. You don't have to go too – you're right by home. So everything's – I can see where it would make for a really efficient project. I mean, you have everything that you need. It's just worth noting that I feel like the bookends are both spiders – and they're both set in apartments or, you know, to some degree. So
what was kind of nice was we saw a group of us went to see The First Omen on Monday during the day.
Oh, nice.
When Panic Fest wasn't going on, you know, because we didn't see enough movies.
So what's going on our free day?
They showed a trailer for Sting before it.
Baller, okay.
Yeah. And it was pretty awesome. And it was cool, too, to see the film and then see the trailer. And I think, Burke, you even said, you're like, after seeing that trailer, I don't know if I would be as excited to or
if I hadn't seen it already, yeah, that trailer maybe wouldn't have hooked me, but I'm so glad I saw
yeah.
it.
Yeah. 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 I feel like that's, you know, it's a good rule, I think. I mean, trailers are great, but it's not the same. I just, sidebar here, Something Weird Video just put out their, they had all those VHS tapes of the intermission stuff back from the drive-in days. Oh. Like, so they put out like 720 some minutes of old, like just reels of food advertisements, local businesses, let's all go to the lobby, that wow. whole thing. And
there was 700 minutes of that to begin with?
Yes. Dude, and they've done
all regional from all over the country. Oh,
right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, and food never looks worse, but it's still like, I'd eat it. Like, you know what I mean? Those like dark, dang, like it's poorly lit. Mm-hmm. Trailers is kind of where I was going with that. Like the trailer was a different type of art form for a long time. Where you can just like, they have a super cut of trailers too, where like you can go and just like, I love that. Just throw on trailers and hang out. Yes. Old school trailers from like, not just genre fair, but a lot of times that's what it is. Cause it's cut with that, you know, the voice, like, don't see it alone. Like that guy. Yep. And how much fun those trailers were. They were almost better than the movies half the time. Mm-hmm. So, but now trailers are so much, like you're dealing with like 3.5 minutes of it. I mean, you're inevitably going to give away some of that gold that's in there. For even sure. if it's just a brief moment, I can't tell you how many scares. Like, damn it, I shouldn't have watched this. It just that, because it would have got me.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like the scare works in the trailer, but now it's not going to work in the movie. And that's such a shame.
Yep.
But I totally get it. I haven't seen the trailer for Sting, but I imagine that, yeah, if you were to do something with that, it might be like, eh, it's not going to be nearly as good as what it actually
is. The other thing with Sting in the location of the apartment building, it's like almost a character into itself because yes. it's a very stylized apartment. It's not really real. You know, the air ducts are big enough for like, whole humans to be crawling yeah. around yeah, yeah, yeah. and you know, things like that. And so, you know, if it was more realistic, it kind of wouldn't work as well.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I think too, and you know, obviously we haven't seen everything, but I hope I'm saying her first name right, but Aaliyah Brown was the lead in Sting.
Yeah, she was great.
And such an incredible young actor. Her performance was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was after the movie, I was like, I'll be surprised if I find a performance I like more than that one sure. this weekend, because she's just incredible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she definitely was the lead, but the side characters too, like the older ladies,
yes.
you know, yeah. they were really great. But yeah, her performance was definitely a standout.
Absolutely. So that's day one. That's not even like the first full day. That right, was the first yeah, night, right? Yeah. That's just
that was like the appetizer.
Exactly, exactly. Like everyone's hyped, but then Friday we roll in, doors open at noon, everybody pours in full of energy, you know, and then I don't know. I saw What You Wish For. Did you see Property?
No, we had lunch with friends that day
okay.
before we yeah, came, yeah. so we missed the whole first block.
Gotcha. No, well, I did not see Property. What I'll say before I talk about What You Wish For, the people that I know who saw Property loved Property.
Mm.
So that's mm-hmm. bodes well. But I saw a movie called What You Wish For, and it's essentially, I mean, I a lot of people are likening it to The Menu, which I get why.
Okay.
It's almost like a Hitchcockian vibe. The story itself feels like that. It's a really taut kind of like thriller. Had one of the most, like, you know, it's not a jump scare, but a moment like where your stomach falls out of you. Like, mm-hmm. it had a moment, like one of the top moments of the fest for me. Great. Completely unexpected moment. You just get sucker punched. And it's, again, it's not a scare. It's just it's a reveal that's out of left field. And it sets the whole story and the whole real like second act into motion. Hmm. So it's really, really good. I feel like, and the thing is, like, you know, come in full rested. Well, I will make note this year. Damn it. If I didn't make it a point to not find myself on the floor like 2 days in because I'm like so dog tired. But I did a good job. I went home, I slept, I drank water.
Good job.
I limited myself despite the number of times you saw me like spilling drinks and like dropping shit.
I saw you more saying that you were going to leave and so there for like another hour than I saw you spilling drinks or anything.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think you said there was one night, I think you said bye to me three times.
I did. I'm just like going in circles. Like,
you're still here?
It's like that
Midwestern goodbye.
It is. It's that moment in Always Sunny when Mac and Charlie see each other across the. Do you guys watch Have you watched Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I've seen some of it.
Yeah, there's a moment. It's kind of a meme now, but like they're looking at each other across the restaurant. They just see each other, make that eye contact. You saw me. I'm like, damn, I know I said I was leaving. But it's true. There's just so many people too. Like there you want to just say goodbye or, you know, whatever to, because you make, you have all, you know, your old friends, and it's never fails. You make new friends. Mm-hmm. And so that's anyhow, what you wish for. These first movies coming in, I feel like they were really strong. Opening day, like the first movie of each day, I felt really, really good about. Like, mm-hmm. It was what you wish for. It's got Nick Stahl coming back, which I hadn't seen him in a while.
Yeah.
Quiet. So, and he delivered.
Awesome.
Essentially, to kind of put it in a nutshell, he plays a chef that gets put into he's in a rough spot. So he's fleeing some individuals, and ends up linking up with an old buddy of his he went to culinary school with, and things go awry, and they run into there's a lot of there's a very wealthy elite group of folks who have a unique appetite.
Okay.
And he's now in the mix here that in a way that he never expected to be. And it's like his culinary skills put to the test. And so it's really, really, like I said, well done, well fleshed out. And I don't know when this one drops, but I do feel like it's going to be well promoted. I think it's going to be out there in front of it. I'm excited for people to see this.
Very cool.
So if you like the menu, I do think this will be, it's probably the only one that I could think of right now that I could kind of like relate it to, but it's a really good flick. Not a ton of blood and guts, you know, it's not that type of picture, but it's definitely one that's got, the ick factor in different ways.
Beautiful. So, yeah. I like that too. And I enjoyed the menu quite a bit, so I will certainly check this one out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful vista that they're at that throughout the majority of this movie too. So it's just really fun to look at, pretty to look at. So yeah, I recommend what you wish for. Let's see here. Like I said, Property got thumbs up. The second block, Hippo played. And then the shorts block, number one. We talked about, we want to shed some light on some shorts.
Yes. And,
and what we saw.
Yep. Yeah. We were in the shorts. And because this was, okay. You were in this one as well.
Yeah. We were in that front row.
I get all the shorts blocks mixed up. But, you know, shorts block one, Panic Fest always does such a great job with programming. And Tim Canton, who handles the majority of the shorts, just knows what to do. And it was great that they kicked off the first shorts block with We Joined a Cult, which was written and directed by Chris McEnroy.
Yes.
Who, Panic Fest alumni, his shorts are always just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you just kick this shorts block off with a completely absurd, gore-filled, you know, five-minute piece that you just can't help but smile and laugh at.
That is the audience for, it felt so at home with everybody when was having fun. And we talked a little bit outside before we started recording about like the different types of stuff you see. Like when it comes to shorts, you know, you have your proof of concept stuff, or you have like your shorts that are just meant to be shorts. That's what they're built for. And so many of these, they just feel 100% at home as what they are. Yeah. I mean, you can tell that these filmmakers, like if it's a first-time filmmaker or somebody who's trying to get out there, you can tell like they've got chops. But their stories were so well done in the short format. They were built for that type of medium for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this block also kicked off. This was our introduction that this was going to be the year of the mangled dick.
True.
And bath bomb. You know, we won't say more than that, but let's just say maybe you get some mangled dick in that one. It's not the only time you get some mangled dick in this festival.
That's fair. Mystery Box.
Yeah, Mystery Box was cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and I feel like it really hit home, like, I don't know, anymore, like the maybe it's just me getting older and more, you know, suspicious of things online, but I'm like, I could see this being like a real world, like, scary thing. I mean, you go on and you're, all these different, like, ads and shit you see on, like, Facebook or whatever, Instagram, people are clicking on shit, and I'm like, guys, don't do that. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to show up at your house when you're clicking on buying stuff from random websites.
And there was also some Kansas City flavor in that block with The Chain, which was written and directed by Tom Hipp.
Yeah.
So a Kansas City filmmaker, and did a very cool take on werewolves.
I agree.
Yeah.
That was fun and kind of like it hit you a little bit. I was like, because I won't say what it was that I, when we came out of that screening, I was like, oh my gosh, like what I wanted to happen isn't what happened, but not in a bad way.
Right.
Like I was like, oh no. But it was, that was a lot of fun. Let's see what else we got. Amygdala. That one,
that was black, like, and the white one, right?
Yeah. If you like tentacles, you get your tentacles.
And that was definitely a change of tone from the mangled dick to the
And we joined a cult.
Yes, exactly. So definitely more of a serious vibe. But
yeah,
it was very moody and
very moody atmosphere, kind of cerebral.
One of the ones I liked quite a bit in this one, I think I mentioned afterwards, was overnights. I thought that was, I liked the setup. I liked where they, you know, because I used to work overnights, you know, and I found myself struggling. Like I'm a night owl by nature, but working third shift beat the brakes off of me. And I remember like times where you're like, did I just see that? You know, like, I need to go to bed, but then, like, I can't sleep during the day. So I kind of appreciated what they went for there. Like, the way that wraps, it's kind of like, I mean, it goes big. Like, it's, like, more than I think what I was expecting them to do. But I was also like, yeah, there are times where you're, like, sitting there just trying to fall asleep, or you're on lunch at work, and you're like, oh, my God, like, I'm seeing things. I need to go to bed. Mm-hmm. It's tough. But I appreciated the nod to the third shift worker on overnights. Let's see here. Type A.
The USB one, wasn't that it?
Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And the funny thing is now, for the past 3 days, I have my, power brick, I plug my phone in every night, and every time I'm, like, putting it, you know, it takes me two times to get the USB right. Yeah. But as I was watching the movie, I'm like, get right on the first time every time.
It was it was actually kind of a brilliant idea, like that. Everybody can't. Nobody, I can't. Nobody I know can.
Type A, it was just another example of it's a 3-minute short.
Yeah.
That just very simple concept, something everyone can relate to.
Yes.
And put a very fun spin on something that is so frustrating.
Something so, so commonplace to even think like, oh, I'm going to make a horror movie out of this.
Yeah.
How does your brain get to there?
Type A was really fun.
Yes. And then Influence. That one came up afterwards, too. A lot of people were chatting about that one.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like really, I mean, more relevant now than ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's the influencer thing. I don't know, man. It's it's a lot. It's a lot. And I don't really, I'm not on TikTok.
Same.
It's just one more thing. I'm like, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And
I
post 2 times a year. So I don't need to introduce another another social media that I just am a voyeur on, basically.
Yeah, well, that's the hardest. Like, with anything podcast related, that's like the toughest thing for me is the promotion on social media. It's like getting back out there and staying on top of it. It's a whole thing those kids are doing now these days.
I wasn't involved with photography, I wouldn't be on social media even a fraction of what I am. And I'm not, you know, really out there trying to grow it and become this massive thing. But, you know.
We're sounding like 3 old people.
Yeah, we are. I am old.
Well, the last one I think on the list was Four Little Angels, which was the one that the caretaker.
Yeah, it was a Spanish one.
Yeah. I liked it.
I liked it quite a bit, too.
Which one was that? I'm blanking on it, actually.
It was where the woman was sleeping on her bed. You know, it was an older woman in, like, assisted living type quarters. And then the caretaker comes in for overnight and, you know, starts, like, taking pictures with her. And
it was, like, the box with the voodoo doll in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it was, we had a pretty late night Thursday. And I remember watching that short.
Right?
The woman's sleeping most of the time, and she looked so peaceful on a bed. I was like, I'm so envious of her. I just want what she has right now. I just want to be sleeping.
Absolutely. But yeah, it was a strong start for the shorts. I felt like when we came out of there, I'm like, okay, it's back. I mean, that's a high bar.
Definitely.
I caught Curse of the Sin Eater,
which all 3 of us were in as well. Yeah. And that's a lot of the same crew that made Black Mold.
Right.
And made The Stylist. And, you know, so that was one that was shot out of Illinois. And actually, short film I directed, Pity, in 2014, has a cameo in that film.
That's right.
Because he's, when he's watching TV, he's watching Pity.
I remember you told me that when I came out there. I was like, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I got hit up by one of the producers when they were filming. They're like, hey, would you be willing to let us put Pity in this movie? Can you send us a link so we could download it? Yeah, sure. All right.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. And that's, I mean, just a sidebar there. Like, it's so cool when, like, the film kind of, like, these families can kind of develop, like, filmmaking right. groups that just, troops that just stick together.
Yeah.
I love that. There's so much chemistry, and you can really feel it in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not to derail it from Sin Eater, just quickly, John's film Pity was the first film I did stills on.
Right.
We were friends prior to that, but that was the first time I did stills. Nice. And that's how I met the producers of Sin Eater.
And Black Mold and stuff. And that's his car that we use in Pity.
That's
and
so cool.
Yep, so it was like a little...
Yeah,
like,
a little and, like and that was the, I mean, on screen.
Yeah, again, I don't want to take away from Curse of the Sin Eater, but Pity was like, we called ground zero for everything that came after it. Because Jill Gavargazian had not really been on a film set before, so she asked if she could come hang out on that set. So Jill came, hung out on set, was basically a PA for us as well. And then the group that made Pity, Jill asked us all to make the stylish short film.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And so it's like, yeah, Pity's kind of like the start of it all.
That's so
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so.
And there's so much. There's so much out there now. Like, that's so crazy.
Right.
But I really dug it. Curse of the Sin Eater had a lot going on. It had some some pretty gross moments. I mean, it's gross like in a very unique way.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not it's not like bloody guts gross. It's just like it's one of these scenes with like the gluttony of it all. It's just
I was told by because a fair amount of the crew was here. And they said that Carter Shimp, the actor that does the sin eating, he requested to actually eat the food that is tradition in the world of sin eating.
Yeah, wow. It is a real Welsh.
Yeah, so the idea is that it's that if you eat a meal off of a dead person's body, that you would inherit their sins, but also their wealth. And so it wasn't just prop food. And I don't know what all the meals were.
Right.
But it was not, you know, common delicacy that we would find.
Yeah.
But that's what he wanted. He didn't want the fake stuff. So he actually ate.
Good for him. That's
real,
committing.
The real meal.
Well, and that's... It
did not look appetizing.
No. And I had never heard of this before, this movie, the idea of sin eating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
It was so interesting, though, because like it compounds. Like, it's, you know, whoever came before you, if they also were a sin eater, you've inherited not just their sins, but the person they took their sins from. So now you have this massive debt on your shoulders of sins that are kind of haunting you, and you're seeing all this stuff, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of what I remember. I read the synopsis, and it gives like a kind of a monkey paw feel to like what you're making a deal with the devil
for sure,
and it really, but it's a very unique way of looking at that. I really liked it.
Yeah, Eric Havens hosted it and did the Q&A, and I remember I had seen Sin Eater in the edit. I'd seen a previous cut of it, and he said in his intro that it reminded him of a Tales from the Crypt type episode where it was a parable. And right when he said it, I was like, oh my God, yes, that's totally what this is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have the same EC Comics feel as a Tales from the Crypt, for example, but it is the monkey's paw, like you're saying.
Yeah.
It is that type of story. Yeah.
Watching it, I totally thought, like, this could have been a Twilight Zone episode.
Yes.
Sure, it'd be my frame of reference because, it doesn't have the eerie or Tales from the Crypt or type vibe, but.
Yeah. And world premiere.
World also. Premiere.
That
world
was premiere, so cool. Let's see here. Moving on. So there, at the same time of at 6:30 block when Sin Eater played, Live Screamers also played. I talked to a few people that went to it. They did enjoy it. I didn't get much detail on it, but that's sort of the song and dance, though, when there's so many movies. But
oh, yeah. I will say I also didn't get to see Live Screamers because of Curse of the Sin Eater, but I met and got to hang out with the director Michelle.
Nice.
And she was great and she was super fun and awesome. And one hell of a karaoke singer. She was giving it on Saturday.
Yes.
Night.
That was some pipes. 9 o'clock block, Asriel. Also played alongside Joe Lynch's Mystery Movies.
Yes.
Asriel was, we talked a little bit after the fact. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, first off, you know, a unique approach, quick, it's like an 80-minute jaunt. It's kind of, there's no fat. I mean, it jumps right in.
Right.
But it's got religious roots for sure. Not much speaking going on in this movie. And we talked about the lack of dialogue, and that's because I think you mentioned it's removing the dialogue makes it more of a challenge for you as far as
for
like,
me yeah. personally, yes.
And I, you know, I get that too. I felt very like I understood. Like I feel like this is a good way to do that if you're gonna do that. If you have a story that you want to tell, I grew up kind of with a very, you know, a religious background, like mm-hmm. my parents were very, you know, involved with church. And I, you know, I can see where like that, the sin of it all, like the taking the speech away and like the words are bad and those types of things like that, that could, it fit like for me.
Absolutely.
And I thought it was fun. I it was intense at times. I mean, there was some, A lot of themes there that you might not expect from a religiously rooted mm-hmm. movie, and it gets pretty. It's post apocalyptic as well, so that does go a long way for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I love that stuff, but yeah. I mean, sorry. I mean, I kind of.
Oh no!
What would you?
I agree. I agree. I think the setup for the reason why there's no dialogue in this movie works, and it's rooted in. In reality, in terms of, you know, the rapture and everything like right. that, if I can say reality and rapture in the same sentence. But yeah, just it's just a personal thing for me. It's hard to feel fully engaged
sure.
without that dialogue. That said, I enjoyed the movie still. It yeah. looked incredible. They shot it in Estonia. And like, can I just have every movie set there at
no
that time
kidding.
Of year? It works so well with that post-apocalyptic setting, and Samara Weaving was great. The gore was unbelievable,
yeah.
and action was really cool. It was, I enjoyed watching it for sure. I think for me personally, not having that dialogue prevented me from like really being into that movie.
Sure.
Like I thought it was really good. It could have been great personally.
Sure,
speaking,
sure, sure.
If I was just pulled into it a little bit more. And that's just me.
Hey, you know, that's a fair point. I mean, it's what's so cool too. Is like, you have movies that are, you go to like the festival like this and you have like a movie like The Menu. You have a movie with no words. You have like all these different things.
Absolutely.
So if it is your flavor, you'll find it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, because I really liked it, you know. Again, the post-apocalyptic thing
yes.
with the rapture tie-in. Like, you've never really seen exactly mm-hmm. that thing before, so that was new.
Yeah.
And the lack of dialogue, you know, didn't hinder it at all for me. Like, mm-hmm. I was totally engaged with it. There's time, you know, where it almost has like a silent movie feel because
sure.
there's some title cards.
Yes.
And, you know, I would have liked maybe just a hair more, like, the world building of, like, what happened in the rapture type thing.
Right.
Who are these, you know, characters in that relation. But yeah, I was totally into it.
And that's huge credit to Samara Weaving though. Like to be able to pull and propel a character without the dialogue that, you know, you normally have at your disposal. It's a feat. And so, you know, credit to her. Cause she was very, very, mm-hmm. very good.
And not just that, but she goes through so much.
Oh,
this
my
is
goodness.
Such a physical role,
yes.
like an incredibly physical role for her. And it's not a glamorous
story. No,
at all.
Absolutely. All right. And so that night I did cruise home afterwards, did not go to the after party.
Oh,
that was
look
my,
at you.
That was my
yeah, that was the night. That was the night that you. Yep.
I right. was almost going to walk down those stairs to rewind, but I'm like, no, I'm karaoke. I'm not going to be a zombie at karaoke tomorrow. Went home. But then Saturday, so the big day, right, as far as the number of movies
right.
are concerned.
Yeah.
You show up at 11, and it kicked off with 11:30 with what we were just talking about before, for my money, was one of the best short blocks I've seen to date.
Mm.
It was just from start to finish, just banger, banger, banger. It was really, really great. Started off with Ride, Baby, Ride.
Yeah.
Which was stylish, fun, very very Christine. I felt it. Like, I know that everybody has to say that, but it's like, it's a great compliment.
And I couldn't help but think of Titan.
Yeah.
You know, the director said that too. Or the producer. It was the producer that was there.
Yeah. Actually, I think she did both. I think she directed and produced.
Oh, Sophie. You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
She was awesome. I remember that the day before she had mentioned that name. I'm like, I'm not going to forget that name. And she said haunted car. I'm like, here for it.
And with the Christine connection too, like, you can't really have a haunted car without thinking of Christine. But it was fascinating that she had said she had never seen or read Christine prior to making the film. Mm-hmm, and then did, you know.
Yeah, that was, I mean, shooting in that car, that, I mean, they had this, the car was a great character itself. I mean, it's like, it was an older vehicle, a cool holes car in the floor, like, but they did a great job shooting in that car to make it dynamic. It, you know, you can get in there and it's like, what can you do? What makes this interesting? And they had, you know, without saying too much, the seats back, they had a lot of going on inside a small space.
Yeah, they utilized the space of that car so incredibly well. Yeah. And especially when she said that they shot it practically.
Yeah.
They didn't, you know, chop a car up.
Yeah.
To modify it to be
bigger. Yeah, because
bigger.
The thing that I noticed that, you know, it was they got the car through, like, you know, a movie release or a auction or whatever. They didn't own the car. Rental is what I'm trying to think of. And so they actually had a camera that had a detachable lens on a cable so that they, you know, didn't have to have the box of the camera in the car. I was like, I never heard of such a thing existing.
Right. So it was like the lens detached from the camera body.
It's a Sony, I can't remember the name that they...
Yeah.
I was like, how fucking cool is that?
Yes. And I was like, yep, that's how you shoot this movie.
Yeah.
So it was like, a 78 Camaro for anyone who's wondering what we're talking about.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, so it's like a small space.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, very, very cool.
The Crossing Over Express. That one actually was a little bit of a gut punch too. I mean, it had, you know, is where he goes into the box and trying to connect with you can connect with a loved one. It's like a medium that's in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you're kind of expecting it to do so. There was some humor
for sure.
But it took itself very seriously. And I was like, damn, that kind of hits a little bit. Like he was genuine about it.
Yeah.
And then the way that the final shot of the short was just kind of like, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, man, it was sincere. Fantastic performances too.
The
acting in it was so great.
Yeah, you're kind of just waiting for it to just kind of completely bottom out and just be kind of more farcical, like right? Mm-hmm. Like, but it's like, it's not. It sticks to its guns, and it. I mean, I thought it landed, but it's.
And I'll just have to give a shout out to Jason Bunn, who was an executive producer on that, and also an EP on Black Mold. So we had a little slight connection to that one.
Very cool. Let's talk about the one that we be bad.
Be bad. Oh my god!
You talk about like perfectly, like
beautiful.
Just that opening scene, like
beautiful.
You know, without spoiling it, you know, you
just beautiful.
Wouldn't know what to think prior. You know, someone described it to you.
The synopsis of it is: a new dad is forced to take action when he realizes that his middle finger has been up in every photo he's ever taken. And that's all you need. It's a 4-minute short. It is setup and punchline and incredibly hilarious.
It was.
So surprising.
And
just, you know. Also, I would never think of a story like that.
It's like ridiculous and I'm so happy. The best possible way.
I'm so happy that these filmmakers did that. You know, Bob Christensen and Matthew Gill, who wrote it.
Like,
thank you for coming up with this idea because
delightful.
Delightful.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, total, like you have kind of heartbreaking, you know, maybe a little, you know, emotionally driven short. Then wham, we have a bunch of like pictures of this guy flying the bird. It's hilarious. It's a great tonal shift. Ramon surprised the shit out of me this festival. I did not realize that My Scary Indian Wedding was in this fest. And I'm walking, it's Friday night. I'm walking towards the main lobby, he's walking towards the badges, and I just see him like cutting through like jaws like coming at me. I was like, what are you doing here? And you know, if you know Ramon, you know he's electric. He comes into the room and it's just like he's shaking hands and talking to everybody. And
and what's great is that Black Mold screened at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and so did My Scary Indian Wedding. So I had seen it, But I didn't realize that Ramon made it because Ramon was not at his own screening, much like he wasn't at his own screening this year at Panic Fest. He missed that black again.
He'll be the first to tell you, but it's like he is notorious for like dipping out and just like showing up two screenings later. Yeah. Like, hey, where you been? Here.
And what's so cool about this applies to Tiger Stripes, which we saw last night, and All You Need Is Death. But My Scary Indian Wedding, I personally love when a filmmaker decides to root their own culture and heritage
sure.
in and around their story and tell a story in which is completely foreign to me.
Right.
And I'm getting a taste of what Indian culture is like. By no means am I saying I understand Indian culture
right.
now.
Right.
You know, but it was just like I'm getting a glimpse into that culture.
Absolutely.
That it's a glimpse. It's more of a glimpse than I had previously. And that's what I want. I love that type of stuff. And that's what I think is so cool about my scary Indian Wedding is that I have never seen a story like this.
Yeah.
At all.
I had no idea. And the same thing with the pay, like mm-hmm. he's introducing us to like these, I don't want to say they're not urban legends, but
like, you know, folk like folklore.
Yeah. From India and these demons that are, I mean, actually kind of crazy to think about. Like, in just, I mean, I guess to fly high here, like there's a demon that may impact your ability or to be married.
Right. And to find your loved one, your yes. true partner.
Yeah, your soulmate.
And yeah, soulmate. Yeah.
Ramon is doing this thing. And I guess he was telling me like he's wanted to do a trilogy of highlighting these different, I think, folklore monsters and demons and whatnot from India. And like, so we did the pay and it was like a blue, like definitely a cooler palette. Mm. And then you come into this one, it's a lot of, you know, reds and yellows, yes, way more vibrant. Yeah, I'm excited to see, he said he's ready to do the third one and kind of, you know, finish the thing off. But I'm excited to see what that looks like and literally what it looks like and what he dives into. But he does this thing where he's like, all the technology that we have in movies today, I think a lot of filmmakers, and I understand why, because a lot of times it's like, okay, nobody wants to watch somebody type on their phone. It's mm-hmm. just something that kind of feels in the way of the story or sure. a way out or all those sure. different things that you're like, okay, well, technology's now, it's like a problem for, especially in horror movies when mm-hmm. you have a cell phone in your hand that can do anything. Yeah. But he integrates it very well. He has definitely. That pop-up on, you know, it's part of the image. It's not cutting away from the story. You're getting it all in the same frame. I like that. And I told him, I think that's probably one of the better ways I've ever seen it done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to sort of put it out. I mean, we know it's there, but then you kind of get to interact with the – you see how the character, what they're reading, and it's not cutting away from their face.
Right.
You're getting it all at the same time. And I think that really – he does it in the pay, and he does it in My Scary Indian Wedding. Mm-hmm. It works.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer. This was one of my favorite shorts with yes. the video yes, game, with the video game, very 80s, and, yeah. you know, and that is super easy to not nail it. But I feel like you nailed it. He had all the vibes that I it felt good. It mm-hmm. was like, you know, and then having a video game in there, pretty neat. It actually, the tension when you see, I loved how like it's moving and he's like, you realize like, okay.
Yeah.
This thing's getting closer, and then it's just no spoilers, but I loved that.
Yeah, and being set in the 80s, especially right now, it seems like there's so much sure. that has been set in the 80s recently. It would be very easy to be like get tired of that, but it was in and out quickly.
Yeah.
The tension within the game, again, no spoilers. Yeah, I thought they did a really good job with that.
Definitely.
And Mallet. That one was so out of left field. I really dug it, but that was I'd say in this, out of all the shorts, that may have been the one that I was just like, wow, did not see anything like this coming.
Yeah, Mallet was very surprising. It oh my gosh, why am I drawing? American Portraits. Is that what that film is called? Oh God, hold on.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Where was it? It was like three segments.
Yes.
That Mallet had a very similar feel to me of that, where it was super minimal and very just grounded in reality, but there's a, I don't know, a sense of extremism.
Yeah.
Introduced.
And this might be a little niche, but I think Severin Films put that out. I think they did a release of American Portraits.
And It was so powerful, and the actor that was in it was so cool.
Yeah, it was such a simple, distilled concept. There was no fat on idea at all.
No fat.
If you know, apparently.
Well done. Yeah, that actor was so ominous. And that was after they were talking about the films afterwards, they went in. He was just basically there are takes where apparently he would just stand there like a statue, massive human being.
Yeah.
Just standing there staring at you. It's just like.
And the other actor who played the client of the masseuse, he comes initially, he seems kind of like an off-putting character, and then he keeps coming back, and you're like, what is with this guy? Right. Why does he keep coming back to this,
Yeah, for sure.
It was very cool.
Bookworm, that is, I guess that's an adaptation of a manga, I believe.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah, and it was one that... The very, very classy, clean, the violence in the movie was almost like it was, it wasn't like, the, I want to say it was, I would say pretty, but do you know what I mean? It was polished. It had a really, really delicate look to it. It wasn't like where mallet's beating you.
Yes.
This movie is filleting you.
There was a sort of elegance.
Yeah.
To it in its execution, I think.
Which pairs well with the library too.
Yes.
And when it finally hits that point where you kind of get the payoff, I think it really, really delivered. Mm-hmm. It was a longer short.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was one. I don't know. Did you dig it?
I saw that one at Sherman Oaks Film Festival as well.
Yeah. I feel like we talked about that, but yeah, it was.
Yeah, I did like it too. Like you said, it had a bit of elegance, and it was a bit of a ghost story, love story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of almost gothic, but not. With all the trappings of a traditional gothic horror.
Yep. True.
Yeah. No, it's a very nice film.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And finally here, we have Nap.
This was rad.
I dug Nap. That was...
I really liked Nap as well. It felt like a Black Mirror episode. Yes, very well put. 14 minutes.
Yes. And with, the sucker punch of an ending. Yeah. Really was. Yeah. And just the... Their practical effects team had a fun day. They had to have a blast doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gave me the Cell and Squid Games kind of vibe.
Sure. Yes. Premise. Mm-hmm. Which also it had it's not saying too much to say that is something that I think everybody kind of where you with USB, if you're trying to fall asleep, how often you can't.
Oh, yeah.
And how terrifying it is when they put it into this context.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think, why I liked it so much is because it felt too personal.
Yeah.
To me. I am a person that struggles with sleep sometimes. And especially when I know I have to be up at a certain time. Let's say if I have to get up really early, I have to get up at 5 a.m.
Right.
I'm used to going to bed around 2 a.m. typically, and then I just lay in bed and I'm thinking about how I wish I was sleeping and I wish I would fall asleep, and when the fuck am I going to fall asleep? And that's just pushing me further and further and further away from sleeping.
Yes.
Now put your life on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to fucking sleep.
Uh-huh. 100%.
Yeah, super, super cool.
But yeah, just to say it one more time, it was really one of the strongest blocks I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. Just start to finish. Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's talk about Ghost Game.
Yep. And so Ghost Game had its world premiere, which was directed by Jill Gavargazian.
Yes.
Friend of all of ours. And, and I was very honored that I was able to host that world premiere. So I didn't get a chance to work on the film, but, I was still involved in a slight capacity.
Absolutely.
So that was really nice.
And I really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really enjoy the stylist. I feel like this movie, Jill did new things. She's not just a new location, a different type of story, but just the way she made the movie. It felt like she took the things that she learned in The Stylist, applied them in new ways. It just felt like a really good, sophomore feature.
Mm-hmm.
I was very, because the frogging thing is terrifying as shit, right?
Yeah, so for people that might not know, apparently frogging is the term when people sneak into your home and spend a night there without you knowing it.
And it's like the challenge of it. It's P-H-R-O-G-G.
Oh, that makes any more sense.
Yeah, right, yeah, that's right.
I guess maybe I'm a little,
at least there's a distinction.
Maybe I'm a little bit more confused now.
But if you're looking it up and you're searching frogging, you're just getting a bunch of amphibians.
It's like fat with a PH. It's frogging with a PH.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's like it's for clout. Like, look what I can do. It's almost like a dominance thing. It felt like I can stay here. You don't know it. I film it. I fuck with you. I turn your stuff upside down. I move this. I eat some food. Whatever it might be, just things that would get inside your head. And the justification from the characters in the movie, and then maybe people who do it, would be like, you know, it's making you, you know, appreciate things a little bit more. Consider or contemplate the next life, because yeah, it's the ghost, right? Like you're haunting them, and for all they know, it's paranormal,
right?
And so it's a fascinating thing how it caught on. No idea, but it's
why it's spelled phrogg.
No idea. But it was really, really cool. Multiple layers, you know, different. Of course, nothing is as it seems.
Right.
So there's so much more than even just that crazy concept anyway. But yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. And it was just great to, you know, see your friend flourish. Yeah.
The Q&A was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes. Thank you. And it was cool too, because even though I didn't work on it, Jill's been, you know, I've been hearing about this film for almost a year now since they shot, and just, or they shot over a year ago, but I was getting updates on set and getting updates through post-production, you know? And so it was just nice to be there, and especially for her to have a hometown premiere. Not just a hometown premiere, it was a world premiere in the hometown,
With people that, you know, you started with, like you doing the QA, she's on your set.
Right.
And now here we are.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then also for her being that Eduardo
and Mike from the Blair Witch
were involved, and she's a massive Blair Witch fan. So that's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Absolutely.
She's awesome cool. for her, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a shout out to Adam Caesar.
Right.
You know, writing that movie. I've watched his YouTube channel, Project Black T-shirt.
Oh, nice.
He pairs a horror movie with a horror novel that you may like if you like this movie. Really
very cool
concept, and he's a big Blu-ray collector like myself, so that's kind of how I stumbled upon him. Like, this is a different take. So he's published a few books now, several, I guess I should say. Clown in a Cornfield.
Yes.
Clown in a Cornfield 2.
Right.
And I think he's got another book coming out real soon, if not already.
Soon, yeah. I believe. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, after Ghost Game, we had, I think we all took breaks a little bit there. Well,
Burke did see Nightmare.
I did go see Nightmare on Elm Street for the, you know, umpteenth time.
Right.
The new 4K restoration looks amazing. You know, it was great to see that with an audience
who
were totally into it. And, you know, Heather Langenkamp was here doing a Q&A, and, you know, she was just as fantastic as you would want her to be. So, yeah, it was great.
It was one, yeah. And the overlap there for me, like, I really would have loved to see it the same way. Like, I caught the back half of Blair Witch, and it's the same thing, like just seeing that with the crowd. I didn't so I had the build out that was going to at 6:30, and I was like, I'm gonna have to leave early and probably miss the Q&A. So it's like, all right, I'll just go ahead, because I needed to take the time to get some food. Had to do that.
Being responsible going home early on a Friday night, eating food during the day.
New man.
Maybe
we'll learn something from that.
But yeah, so I'm glad that was awesome. I'm sure, you know, I was bummed when it's kind of all like overlapped. But the build out was there at 6:30. Got to do the Q&A for that, and that was first picture for somebody when they come in. This is my first feature film. There's something, I mean, as doing the Q&A for me anyway, there's a little extra, like, I want it to be good for them, like, the experience.
Of course.
So that's where I think we talked about this last year, like, that's what you want it to be, everything that they would want it to be and more, is to make them celebrate their movie. So this one isn't too terribly long, 71 minutes, so a pretty quick movie. But the director, Zeeshan, was there, and it was so cool, because this was a very unique movie.
Definitely.
It was a personal piece. His whole – during the Q&A, we talked a lot about – this was the showing that my buddy Sam came for too, and he was saying the same – similar things. But this was where, you know, he was talking about how, like, it's more – Terrence Malick is his favorite director, very inspired by him, and you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Very Badlands feel, kind of out in the desert. There's a lot of just interpretation. It's more of an experience. The narrative is it's there, but it's more just you're getting the feeling of the movie more so than following along with the plot. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a bold move for a first movie, I think.
Oh yeah,
going that direction. But for me, I really enjoyed what he was putting out there. And it's interesting because there was quite a bit of like some religious tones. Mm-hmm. He himself, I don't believe he's religious, you know, because he made a comment. But it was still like several movies in this festival touched on religious horror.
Yeah,
which was interesting.
And what I liked with the build out too, it was the type of the film. The credits were rolling and the person sitting next to me just leaned over and said, "So what did you think?" And my response was, "I need to sit with it before I know what I think with it." Because like you were saying, like it just offered a lot in terms of its conceptual approach, its thematic approach. And it was a very subtle film with nuance.
Yes.
And so it's not a movie like that you really are like, oh, in the moment, I know exactly how I feel about it. You kind of have to let it wash over you and kind of marinate.
Yeah.
And it was great to have that at Panic Fest. Again, just going back to Panic Fest offers so much.
Yeah.
You know, there's movies that like during the middle of it, you know, you fucking love it because you're just like laughing the whole time and celebrating and smiling. And then there's other movies that, like you're saying, is more of a feeling.
Right.
And you kind of have to sit with that feeling and really determine what it means to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mentioned Zeeshan. Trevor was the producer that Trevor, came, was also there. Trevor was with Dylan was there with Zeeshan to see the movie. So
and I know Bria Grant, I was on the phone with her right before Panic Fest, and she's friends with Zeeshan. And so
she
so
that's awesome.
Yeah. So she was like, you know, make sure you say hi to him for me.
Yeah.
Which Rob Stern, you know, the DP that shot Black Mold and the stylist and Sin Eater, we saw it together. So then we got to just say, we're friends with Bria. She wanted to say hi.
How cool is that?
Just nice to have those little connections.
Yeah, yeah. And they were two of the nicest guys. They were awesome.
Yeah, he was a very sweet guy.
Yeah. Caught the tail end of Blair Witch. That was so cool to watch, to see the way that – I mean, we watched Blair Witch for the first time. When you're young, it's like you're not laughing very often, maybe here and there when he's screaming – like the national or America the Beautiful or whatever. He's like a screaming.
Yes.
Like that stuff is funny, but the whole crowd knowing where it's headed, loving the fact that we're watching it, was just laughing and having a good time. And then, but still, those last 15, 20 minutes hit like they always have.
Yeah.
Everybody was dead silent. And the people who hadn't seen it before, so you heard, oh God, when you see the handprints, it was really, really cool to see.
And so I didn't catch it here. I ended up staying out in the lobby and talking to Rob Stern because we don't see each other that often. I just caught the Q&A. But I had seen The Blair Witch, like when it first came out, I saw it in the theater. And, you know, I enjoy it, but I think it hits different depending on what age you were when you see it. Yeah, I was a little older than, you know, probably some of the people that really have an affinity for it. But yes, it's a great movie classic. The last scene, you know, is just an all-time horror classic, sends chills down your spine. And, you know, the Q&A, those guys were super entertaining.
Yeah.
Mike, particularly, is just like as charming as can be, you know.
So 100%.
Very cool to see it.
And I was in theater, too, during Blair Witch because I got to host the world premiere of Worlds.
Yeah.
Which is a mockumentary from some filmmakers, Chris Hammerberg, out of New Jersey, which they said in their intro, Lake Mungo was a very strong influence for them. And I agree with that. You can see it. This is a film like Lake Mungo.
Yeah.
And I think that they accomplished exactly what they're setting out to do. And I know it's not a film for everyone, but if you like Lake Mungo and you like found footage / mockumentary films, I think it's a really awesome entry for a film that they made for $4,000.
That's so, that alone is stunning.
Exactly. And I thought it was so cool too, just for other people. And we said this during the Q&A, like, let this be an inspiration for anyone that watched the film that are thinking about making a film or, you know, want to. Because first-time filmmakers, they've been doing YouTube stories, but first time making a narrative film, for $4,000, they premiered at Panic Fest.
How about that? And, like, honestly,
just the coolest shit.
You know, you mentioned, like, not for everybody. You know, I kind of feel like, too, like, I'm borrowing from there's a game developer that has this motto, and I really love it. It's a game for everybody is a game for nobody. I feel the same way about anything. You know, a film for everybody, that's, I mean, it's a film for nobody. You got to say something and it's, they have your message, do your thing, and you'll find your crowd.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. No, they're such a great group of people and just really happy for them. And,
absolutely.
And yeah, Worlds is definitely worth a watch.
Cool. That night, so I was debating going to another screening, but I ended up going down to karaoke. I did go to
the screening, yes. So I went to Mother, Father, Sister, Brother, Frank. And no idea what it was about going in. It turns out it's just this over-the-top, kind of a farce of a comedy. You know, a murder takes place, kind of the aftermath of that, just this normal suburban family dealing with this crazy murder and just silly and fun. And the star was Mindy Cohen from the Facts of Life sitcom of the 80s.
Okay.
I didn't recognize her for like maybe 30 minutes going in. I was like, oh my God, that's Natalie from the Facts of Life.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, then we were just tearing it up down in Rewind. It was down Rewind karaoke.
That was fun. It was packed. Fun. It was great. Like I said, last year I was not up to par, but this year I was down there, hung out for the whole thing, the champagne supernova of it all. I appreciated. I'd never heard that Weird Al song before.
Oh, One More Minute.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. That's off of Dare to Be Stupid.
I was gonna say you didn't do your traditional
Dare to Be Stupid. I didn't do my Dare to Be Stupid. I pivoted, but I still did Weird Al One More Minute. It's a wonderful love song. If you want to call it a love song,
you painted a picture up there. It was beautiful.
Well, you know, my attitude is you don't have to be good; you just got to be entertaining.
That's all
I strive for when it comes to karaoke.
You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it.
Well, thank you.
So that next morning, so there was a screening alongside Nightmare Junkhead's event. Did you go this year to the Nightmare Junkhead?
Oh, yeah. We did Nightmare Junkhead. You know, not to boast or anything, but we won once again.
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row.
Shout out to our teammates, Lauren and Marie.
Yep, well done. Yep.
Mostly John and Marie are the brains of it. Lauren and I just chime in once in a while.
Well done. I caught New Life at that same time slot.
That's why I missed it.
And it was great. Just such a good movie. It's one that I could spoil really easily, so I got to be careful. But it's like it involves like a on the run fugitive feel right out of the gate. You get that's kind of the story we're set up with.
Okay.
Marry that with some communicable disease and some wild twists, some beautiful, like it's shot in Oregon, beautiful scenery, like some mountains and anytime, you know, you can put me out in like that out west, like put some mountain ranges, give me some, I love westerns for that very reason.
Sure.
Just open country. It's beautiful. But, Justin Ross, the producer, was there, and I told you guys outside, like, I had not talked to him in the better part of a decade. Whenever I was young, I was coming out of high school, I was really into movies, and somebody, I cannot remember who, told me, hey, you should get a hold of this guy named Justin. He goes to Maryville, and he's Northwest, I mean, and he's really into movies, too. So I talked, had several conversations back in the day, just about, you know, half of it was just geeking about movies. And he goes out to Hollywood. He's doing his thing, and he's doing a lot of great stuff. And I see his name on the screen, and I about fell out of my chair. I was like, no way. This movie was awesome. And guess who's here? And so I get to catch up with him. It's best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. And it drops next month. It'll be available. So I encourage everybody to be on the lookout for that. You don't have to wait very long. And it is just a different type of story. There's a lot going on. There's some like little, oh man, heartstrings pulled, everything.
I'm pretty sure that played Fright Fest with us this year when Black Mold was there, and I missed it there, and I missed it here. So I'm glad it's coming out next month so I can finally check it out.
Very, very close. Let's see. After that, I spent some time chatting with Justin, but then Activated Man. I popped into – I missed like the first like 15 to 20 of that movie.
Okay.
Not what I expected at all. You've got a pet dies in that movie.
Okay.
There was so much emotion. It was a very, very personal project. Be trepidatious. I mean, watch it. But know you're about to walk into a buzzsaw. It hits. And the director was there, and he kind of talked about how he lost his dog and the story there and everybody that was missed and up. It was tough.
Well, if you like films shot in the Pacific Northwest, you should definitely watch The Island Between Tides when that comes out. Because that was shot in British Columbia, north of Vancouver. just strikingly beautiful, yeah, just beautiful lush
green
visuals
everywhere. I mean, beautiful island out in the middle of
And they actually said that it was
waterway.
I don't remember the name of the town that they shot in, but it was the first time a film had been to that part of British Columbia.
Wow.
And they had to take a 23-hour ferry ride.
Damn.
To get to it. And, of course, they could have flown, but all their grip trucks and everything.
Sure.
23-hour ferry ride.
Damn.
So, it's beautiful. Unbelievable.
That's
beautiful,
so cool.
Looking film. And it's, apparently, it is, it's based off of the play called Mary Rose, which was a pseudo-sequel to Peter
Pan.
It's
the same author as Peter Pan.
And it's like similar ideas of Neverland, but it's this island between the tides. And But what the director said was that it was the project that Hitchcock said he wishes he would have made.
No shit.
And I guess he had a script done for it, but producers told him no one would want to watch a movie about a ghost.
Wow. Okay.
So it never got made. And then ghosts are so popular.
Incredible. That's so cool. Yeah, I definitely have to catch that one. This next movie that we caught, I'm pretty sure, was one you mentioned earlier.
Oh, All You Need Is Death.
Yes.
Yes, 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 which was the last festival screening. And it's a film out of Ireland, and it is a very rooted in Irish folklore, Irish culture, about people that collect these old forgotten songs and they happen to release something not of this world. It's a film all about dread and suspense.
Yes.
And the score is god fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just powerful.
The director was awesome too.
Yeah.
Paul. Cool cat.
Yeah. Very, very cool dude. And he was at Overlook Saturday night. They screened there, flew into Kansas City Sunday, so then he could do the screening here. So
yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm. Horror and music, movies and music have such an intimate relationship. Yes. So it worked real well.
Yeah.
Speaking of music and movies and the way it closed out.
What a segue.
Yeah. Off ramp. This thing, I didn't, when Adam suggested, he's like, hey, I sent out the hosting schedule. I was like, oh, what's Off Ramp? And I looked it up and I'm like, it's a horror movie about a couple juggalos getting
about
to the festival.
Juggalos.
Get to that carnival. Like, okay. So I've got I want to do a little homework, learn a little bit more than I didn't know much about the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But what a movie. I mean, it was kind of like the jokes were just hit. Like, it was kind of nonstop funny.
Yeah.
And then they would hit you with some of the most, like, serious subject matter you could think of, and at the same time, like, juggle that with a joke and keep it light, but, like, because you need that release. Like, there are points in this movie where it's like,
this is some heavy dark subject matter.
Yes.
In it. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, and Nathan Tape was the director, and he co-wrote it with Tim Caro, and we spent a fair amount of time hanging out with them Sunday night and Monday, and as I told them, I just think the way that they... I hate to use this term, juggled.
Yeah, I actually did because, that on the damn stage.
Didn't you? Yeah.
I didn't even mean it, just the first word that came to mind.
But you're going from like butthole jokes to just like true raw human emotion in a matter of moments.
Yeah.
And there's some fucking beautiful shit in there too.
Oh, right.
Like there's really beautiful moments and then you have absurdity and...
Yes, dude. I was like sitting there after like there's the moments. There's plenty of them, but towards the end, there's a sequence, and I swear, like I was like kind of misty.
Yeah,
I'm like this is. I never would have guessed that I would have been like actually moved by essentially a comedy, but it's a road movie, which I told Nathan, like it's a bold move, I think, because he's done a lot of work. But this is his first feature film. And so you can tell he's a polished, accomplished guy. But it was still, I mean, a road movie, you tackle a lot, especially if you're going to stop a lot of spots. That's a lot of different, you get a lot of character, but I feel like you could run into a lot. It's the bold move, the safer move maybe, to do something kind of like limit your locations. But everyone that he visited was a character I felt like in and of itself. You had those small town little rest stops. You had the neon soaked trailer. All that stuff was just like, I don't know. I love neon. So that really hit for me. But Yeah, I was just so impressed, you know, through and through by the performances and the direction. And John Oswald was here too.
Yes.
And he played the lead. He was so good.
Yeah.
And anyone going into it too, who maybe has a preconceived notion of like, oh, I don't want to see a movie about juggalos, or they don't care about the Insane Clown Posse or whatever. Right. That's, you know, just the environment it's in, but it's really, you know,
right.
kind of this overarching theme of like finding your family and,
right.
you know, making the bonds in your life and connecting with people. So it was maybe, like, very poignant as well.
Which I, you know, and as I mentioned this to, it wasn't after the Q&A, but I was out in the lobby, was talking about it, and I was like, that is so kind of on brand for... even like this festival.
Yes.
Like it's a universal thing. Like when kind of like the super fans, like the weirdos, all the fun, you know, the people like us who come together and like we bond and you get those same vibes. Like people that you see once a year, it's like you pick up right where you left off.
Right.
It's a found a chosen family.
Yeah. And it's a film about people traveling to the gathering of the Juggalos, which is a music festival that they're going to spend days at and hang out with the same people. That's no different than what we're doing at Panic Fest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some people live locally, but a lot of people travel for it and come from out of the area to hang out for this thing that we all love. And we all come from different backgrounds and we have our own lives. But when we're here together, it's just like we're bonded. And those bonds last outside of this festival.
Yeah.
No different than... the Gathering of the Juggalos.
The festival and provides.
the carnival.
Carnival.
Oh, yeah. Festival provides. That's what. All right. That's what. Panic Fest 2024. The festival of mangled dicks and the festival provides.
Whoop whoop
whoop whoop.
Oh, don't make me do it. Don't make me do it.
Oh my God. Well, I know. Like we jumped in here. We said it was going to be. Well, we'll probably hit an hour. But as we could have talked, probably another 30 minutes
to
that hour.
We got plenty more to,
yeah. But definitely I would love to keep the tradition going in future years. This is a lot of fun to unpack the whole festival the best we can and the bite size for people who movies to keep on your radar for sure. I'll try to list some of these out there, like with some links to like where you can find them.
Sure.
So that way you can keep them on your watch list. Cause it really was like a year, like a banner year. Like mm-hmm. I feel like all the way around, you can just kind of tell from this conversation, we didn't see really anything we didn't like at all.
Yeah,
and that's
year was really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, I guess it's tradition now.
Yeah.
So we'll see you in a year.
That's
as we do absolutely. The third year of the Panic Fest recap.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. And John, Dave, I appreciate you guys coming on. I think last year you did this. So we close out every episode by saying, we'll see you at the Cinema Dirtbags. And then we have this clink, right, where I'll have to superimpose it, I guess. But peek behind the curtain here. We don't have the cups at Screenland. But if you would like to, guest of honor here today.
We will see you at the Cinema Dirtbags.
Whoop, whoop.